Hey Seth, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you two?
Excellent.
Doing great, thank you.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Space Explorer podcast. I am your host, Zach Hall, and I am joined by my... What's your title, Seth?
I'm thinking senior space reporter.
Assistant to the assistant...
Oh, wait, dang it.
Assistant to the managing editor.
Yeah.
we're going to work on sharpening that one. And then Astrid, introduce yourself.
My name is Astrid Cordero, and I am writer, photographer for Space Explorer.
Yeah. So, you know, you may have seen SE and ES, our Sunday Spanish top stories of the week. We missed it last week because we were doing some traveling that we'll talk about in just a moment. But
we're working on it this weekend.
Yeah. Basically, you know, it's you know, my vision for Space Explorer is to you know, be a team, but you know, more importantly than that, be a diverse team. And so, you know, when you're trying to create something brand new, you can kind of put in your own values and everything. And so for Space Explored, big part of that is to make sure that we're not just my perspective, but, you know, representative of the community. And Astrid's doing an awesome job and not just bringing that in her vision with photography, but also in, you know, literally writing in a language that I can't write in.
Yes. So I wanted to just bring that up to the Spanish community because I feel like they don't get enough news when it comes to space in Spanish. So growing up in South Florida, Miami, there's a lot of people that would always ask me, hey, so what is this that you went to? That's so interesting. How do I learn more about it? And I've always wanted to give them more information. So by being part of this team, and thank you for the opportunity, I'm able to bring that out to them. And hopefully it keeps growing and growing. So we get more Spanish community, and not only here in the United States, but worldwide in South America, Central America, you name it. So I'm excited.
What do you think about a Spanish podcast?
We could do a Spanish podcast. I don't know if there's anyone in Spanish listening right now. But I would love that.
Yeah. I think Seth could co-host with you.
Okay.
Seth? You can. I'll learn on the way as we do it.
Hola. Yeah.
As the
hola,
person
who, ¿cómo estás? That's about it.
There you go.
as the person who edits his post, hey. Spanish is his calling.
Whoa. You're gonna be fluent in like fire, 6 months. Dude.
Wow. It's one language. Yeah. So that would help. kidding. So let's talk about a trip that we took recently back to kind of my hometown and you know, the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, South Mississippi, where NASA did their Green Run hot fire test on the core stage of the Space Launch System rocket. That's the rocket that NASA will use to go to the moon for the Artemis 1-3 missions and beyond. And it's been a program in the making for a long time. It's been repurposed for different programs. It's now the rocket that will take the Orion capsule around the moon on an uncrewed lunar flyby mission called Artemis 1 as early as this November, which is awesome. And then Artemis 2 will have astronauts on board for that lunar flyby mission. Artemis 3 we'll send astronauts to the surface of the moon using a human landing system that we'll learn more about this year. So that's all exciting. But before you can do that, you've got to test the core stage of this rocket. It has four RS-25 engines that were flown on the space shuttle, on various space shuttle missions. It's the main engine for Space Launch System. And the core stage is like this massive fuel tank with those four engines on board. In addition, you'll have two solid rocket boosters on either side, one on either side. But the big deal was Stennis Space Center in Mississippi had to test fire the core stage of SLS, guarantee that there are no problems that they'll experience on launch day in November when they actually send Orion to the moon and back with SLS. And it's a test. They look for issues. They found an issue. Yep. and so that's what we'll discuss in a moment. But because it's my hometown, I wasn't planning on going because NASA limited media credentials to like six people, one or two national outlets, three or four local media outlets, and that was it. You know, Stennis, they don't have media days in the way that Kennedy Space Center has media days like every week. So they're not really equipped to handle that. And then the pandemic, because of COVID-19, they've been on, you know, a very limited run in terms of having team members out there. So they only had six or so people out there. It's okay. They did a very nice press conference afterwards with those six or so people.
It was really cold.
But it is really cold.
Freezing the people off the entire time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And some reporters were to stop asking questions.
I mean, you know, good for NASA on that one. But we went and we had our colleague Daryl Sasse, who lives in New Orleans, drive over to the outside of Stennis Space Center and kind of ride the perimeter. Last summer, when I was so local there before I moved to Orlando, I took my motorcycle and just rode the perimeter in the summertime to see, could I see core stage? And I wanted to be able to fly my drone, like the legal flying area, and also get a perspective of the big orange core stage on the B2 test stand out there. And because it was summer, you know, the trees were full and you couldn't see through. Daryl did us a big favor and he looked at some points that I pointed out and he went beyond that and actually found places where in the fall you can see through the trees and he picked out a spot for us to go and hang out and Astrid and some more of the Space Explorer team were at the south gate, right, where you enter, and we were on the north side. So who all was with you on the South Gate?
So it was Ann.
Yeah, Ann Tran,
who's
part of the Explore team.
Yes, he's awesome. And it was David Matoro.
Yeah, from New Orleans.
And my friend Wolf.
Your friend Wolf is very nice.
It was great. Yeah, he's a space fan. And my wife.
Yep, and your wife.
Yeah, and it was great. It was great. And seeing it from, 3 miles away?
Three miles away, yeah.
It was great. I wasn't expecting it to be so close. It was still nice hearing those engines fired up.
Yeah, so we were in for an 8-minute engine test, which was going to be awesome because when you see this thing launch, it's like it launches and it goes away. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you don't have that sustained 8 minutes of engine roar. What we ended up getting was about 62 seconds of engine roar, and then it stopped.
Minutes. Yeah, 2 minutes.
2.7.
There you go. But it was still great. I mean, it's still awesome. You know, that's why we test, right?
Yeah, and we'll talk in a minute about what happened. Yeah. But you know, in the moment, it was just like, uh-oh. So where I was, Daryl was the first person to stake out our spot that he found the day before. I was the second person to join him, and then the test moved forward by 1 hour. So instead of being 5 p.m. it became 4 p.m. Yeah. Eastern time. And then it ended up being pushed back a little bit to the, you know, again, but it was nice. By the time we had, the engine fire happen, I think there were probably around 200 people around us, which is a little bit concerning in a pandemic, but you know, it was outside. We were all spaced out.
Yeah.
Which was very helpful. Everybody kind of had they were in their own groups of people. And what I saw was local people who lived around me in Mississippi and Louisiana, whenever I lived there, who I never interacted with, but they were super enthusiastic about what was happening that day. And they knew about it and they didn't want to miss it. You know, a mix of Stennis employees and their families and just people who are super enthusiastic about, you know, NASA and space flight. And that was very cool. What about on the south side for you?
So there was a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely not as here in the Cape.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of people and a lot of locals, and they were very happy too about it, you know. And
that was your first time in
Mississippi, that was my first time in Mississippi.
Yeah,
and it was great. It was a great state, great people, very pleasant. Scenery is different than, again, I'm from South Florida, mm-hmm. So definitely, you know.
Yeah, they have seasons there.
Great, we don't have that here.
They have fall and winter.
In rotation, yes. Me being a northerner, who actually gets four seasons.
Wow. Is that a landscape?
What? It was great for me when you guys were all out there. I was just sitting back, laying on my couch. enjoying the NASA stream while you guys were out there sleeping away.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Being in the woods was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was. But I liked it.
Did you get to see the first stage of the Saturn V?
Yes, so I got to see the first stage. Yeah. That was supposed to be for Apollo 18. I think I was told.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong.
I think so.
So, yeah.
That's what they say.
That was really nice. But it was close.
It was 18 or 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you go from Louisiana to Mississippi on Interstate I-10, there's a first stage of a Saturn V rocket that never flew, but it was created to either fly on 18 or 20, and you know, obviously the Apollo program ended before that. So, but it's right there. It used to be over at MISU, another NASA facility over in New Orleans, and they moved it to, just outside of Stennis whenever they opened the Infinity Science Center in 2012. So some local information there. It was really cool to see people who I know from the Cape and who I know from going out to Boca Chica, Texas, who ended up being there, you know, like in my neck of the woods before I moved, and, you know, really see Stennis Space Center in action. It was very awesome. So Seth,
yeah.
What actually happened on that day?
So not as much as we all hoped. So they had they moved it forward an hour, and then they ended up moving it back. Like, was it by the end of the time it actually launched? Was it like an hour past the original time, I think? Or it was around there. NASA did a stream. It was pretty good for a NASA stream, for a NASA solo produced stream.
The problem with the stream is that whenever it did end early, they were just like, success, and they didn't have a script for what happened.
You could tell it's very scripted. Yeah. And then they ran out of script material with the delays because they started an hour early and then they delayed so long and they ran out of scripted material. But overall, so they started the launch. They started the four RS-25 engines at T minus 6 seconds, actually, instead of T minus zero, similar to shuttle. And they ran for about 62.7 seconds, about exactly. That's what NASA says. And they shut down. So there were three major things that went wrong. That happened that were of concern.
That occurred, at least.
Yeah. And there was a call out called a MCF, they called it, which stands for major component failure, which is not good. Though they came out later saying that was due to a sensor issue. So that was kind of that's a good sign that it's just a sensor. There was a flash that they said they saw, around the engines, which is also concerning if that is a thing. And then also then the early shutdown of the engines. So the early shutdown of the engines was caused by, conservative set parameters that they set, because this is a flight article. They don't want to push this flight article and then damage it.
So it's unlike testing like a serial number version of Starship.
Starship, they go full out. They don't care.
Yeah, they have they have the potential to make tons of those. We're testing the one that we're going to fly, it's a test. It's an actual mission. There won't be astronauts on board this time. But
you don't want to lose it. The term that we use is being hardware rich. That means SpaceX has a lot of Starships. NASA only has one core stage. The second core stage is still in development, or still being in production. So they can't really they don't want to lose this core stage. So they set these parameters more conservative than they would normally do. And so when it reached, they reached the setting, outside of that parameter that they like, it shut down a power unit for hydraulics. This was about the time that they were going to start something that actually would have been really cool to see, which is thrust vector control. They were going to move these engines around.
Yeah.
And which is something you would not see during a launch.
Right.
Because if they would move these things around that quickly, you would have a booster going to end over end.
That's not good.
Yeah.
So you could only do on this test stand. And then around that time, they started this power unit shut down, and then the computers, which is what they were supposed to do, shut down the engine test. So this is a very good test of the flight software and the flight computers, which are new to the SLS. and RS-25s that are in this rocket that weren't in the shuttle. Right. So this was actually a pretty good test for them. They came back and they said that they're still looking through data, of course. There's a lot of data that they have to, you know, look through between Boeing, Aerojet Rocketdyne, who builds the engines, and NASA themselves. But they have pretty good attention that they have figured out most of the issues, and they're just going through and checking to make sure the objectives that they set. They set 23 objectives. Mm-hmm. How many of those were met? How many of those were partially met? And are there any objectives that need to be retested? Right. So that's kind of what they're doing now.
And there has been, I don't know if you guys saw the news, there's a new president since we last spoke.
Yes.
And, yeah. And which means there's also a new NASA administrator incoming.
Do we know who that is yet?
Not yet. There's
The reporting is that
Biden will choose a woman to be the first female NASA administrator. Right now, the acting administrator is the previous associate administrator. I think his name is Steve. I think his last name is Jurcik. I'm not sure. It's J-U-R-C-Z-Y-K. I think his name is probably. Yeah, I'm going to say Steve Jurcik. And he's been around.
If you can't pronounce it.
For a while, you know, like 17, 18 years at NASA. So he's guiding the ship now, but and then like Kathy Loiters, who's head of
human exploration, I think.
Yeah, it's basically all human space flight missions. So which is, you know, not, she used to run crew program for, you know,
she ran the commercial program with SpaceX and Boeing.
Yeah, and now she's over all of the human space flight missions, which includes the Artemis program to go to the moon and beyond. And so she's still on board. She's still there. You know, Jim Bridenstine resigned as, you know, his Trump administration is outgoing.
It was awesome.
The decision of what to do with core stage will lie in the hands of the next administrator, because what will happen is they'll have to decide based on the data, do we want to do another hot fire test? Or do we want to ship this thing off to the Cape and you know, finish assembling it at Kennedy Space Center and fly it in November? And one factor in all of that is that they're doing the solid rocket booster stacking at Kennedy Space Center, where they seal the segments of those solid rocket boosters. And once they make that seal, they've got a countdown of 1 year or less to fly this thing before they're no longer, you know, flyable,
which already started.
We're already in there.
What they've only started though is they've only stacked like three.
Mm-hmm.
So if they stack them all, then that's like, okay, like we gotta get this thing done. But since they've only stacked a few, only have that countdown on a few seals.
I think it does make the difference in if they can get this thing out. So the deadline was they wanted to ship the core stage to Kennedy. Yeah, by
February. They wanted it to be shipped by.
Yeah, sometime
their February. Goal was, it probably mm-hmm. won't meet that goal now.
Well, if they decide that they don't need it for the test,
they don't have to redo the test, then they could still meet their goal and actually meet it early. Well, it would still be shipped out in February. They stated today that no matter what happens, they have to, the engines, because they were fired, has to go through, they call it drying phase.
Right.
And also some refurbishment. So as long as all of that goes well, they could get that, and they don't have to do a retest. They can get the booster out in the beginning of February, I believe.
Yeah, you know, because it's not a crewed launch, it doesn't involve astronauts on board, people on board.
So this is the mission to certify the vehicle, and a failure in the vehicle would not be good for the first crewed flight.
No.
It would probably mean it would not be certified. It would have to be reflown, which would be very expensive. Like, I think SLS is about $1 billion to launch, I believe. Yeah. So
I just wouldn't be surprised if they say we have all these tests completed or partially completed, and we've collected data that we wouldn't have without testing. Now let's fly this thing and see.
I have complete faith in like NASA, because they've been building this thing for years. Like usually when NASA does something, it doesn't fail. Like it does very good. And and what they stated about the issue that came into the issue that ended the early shutdown or started the early shutdown is that this wouldn't have caused the failure in flight.
Right. It was
because it was already
conservative threshold for testing purposes.
Because the power units that they use for the engines, I believe the way they explained it was that there are two power units for each engine. And even if this power unit would have shut down, they had the other power unit that was working. They only shut it down because they're on a test phase and they can do it. And they want to protect this core station, not damage anything.
Yeah. So put me on team. Let's fly this thing, even if that's not the right to call. We'll see what they decide. So you know, and we'll probably know more in the next week, 2 months time on what they do here. So stay tuned. We'll learn more about that. I want to try and keep these to half an hour. So Seth and Astrid, let's see if we can knock out these next two topics.
Sure. I'll start. It's going to be a lot of stuff this week.
Yeah. So Seth, take it away. What happened with Starship?
So last week when we talked about, they did three static fires last Wednesday and ended up damaging two of the engines, the Raptor engines. So they had to replace those two engines. They did that over the weekend, last weekend. And they were, next step was going to redo a static fire. And they were attempted Monday, didn't go. Attempted Tuesday, didn't happen. Today's Thursday. Yes, yesterday they finally actually got to the fueling part of the static fire, which didn't happen Monday and Tuesday. Three attempts. They started off early in the morning. Three attempts went by. Three aborts. Well, at least what we believe are aborts. Yeah. We believe they're really trying to do a static fire. They're not trying to do a wet dress rehearsal. They are very much trying to fire up these Raptor engines and get the Starship flying. And they could not do it three times in a row. One of the times, though, was not necessarily their fault. Maybe it was not their fault to do it the first time. And it was partly their fault because they had a range violation. So if you don't know, down there in Boca Chica, their test site is on a public road. It's called Boca Chica Boulevard. I don't remember what it's like a county highway, I think, but
yeah,
Boca Chica Boulevard, what we call it. And it leads to a public, Boca Chica Beach, a public beach. People regularly go there, to the fish and to be on the beach, cause it's a much more quiet beach than South Padre Isle, which is more,
touristy.
And we're watching the stream, and all of a sudden a Honda CRV or some sort starts driving down with some kayaks attached to it down Boca Chica Boulevard with a fueled up Starship, pressurized and everything, to go place where you really do not want to be. Like, this was actually, like, we were kind of joking about it, but like, you don't want to, like, it's not kind of a joking manner. Like, that was a very serious very, very serious area to be. They close that road off on purpose. They do a check of the area. Obviously, they missed this person, and that signaled a abort of that static fire attempt. And then later on,
in launches, there's often a wayward vehicle of some sort that causes the launch to be pushed back. Our best, one of our great friends, Wayward Plane on Twitter, is representative of.
Yep.
The planes that are in range violation that prevent launches from happening. Wayward boats are a thing as well. If there's a boat in the range where, something could happen over the water, then they can't launch. So a wayward kayaker is an all new thing.
This is the first time I think we've seen this, because usually it's very hard to drive the area because launch complexes are usually closed off and they're not open to the public. They closed. So this was very interesting to see that happened Wednesday. Actually, the day before, we had a test tank 7.2, SN 7.2, which got rolled out to the test stand. So this is a test tank. So the reason why it's named 7.2, I'll be honest, I don't know why it's called 7.2.
7.1 mistaken.
So they back when they were earlier in the numbers, they had SN7 that came out. But SN7, they were having weld issues with starships. So they, instead of building a full size starship, they built a test tank to practice welding, a new welding technique called SN7. It was a real small test tank. Went out to the test bed. They pretty much popped it with pressure. And then they certify their new welding. They had 7.1, which was another test tank that had different manufacturing techniques, I believe. And that got sent out there. That got popped. They popped it, fixed it, popped it again with pressure testing. And so this is another one, a third one. So this is what we believe is testing a thinner metal. Right now they're using 4 millimeter thick steel to build Starship. And this is going to be using 3 millimeter. So it'll be saving a bunch of weight, which is needed for when they have to add in the crew stuff and the heat tiles and all that stuff.
Well, you finish that thought, and then I'm going to ask you an important question.
So they have for when they're going to be testing this. We believe they're going to be testing it by the 24th. They have specialty flight restrictions for this test. It's a little bit higher than what their normal flight restrictions are for static fires, and these go to the 24th. Though they only have road closures for today and tomorrow, so they need more road closures for over the weekend. Mm. Go ahead.
Okay, here's a question, and then we'll go to our last topic, Windhoff.
Windhoff. Oh my god. Windhoff. Yeah. They do have flight restrictions for next week as well. Okay. But those kind of come and go as they keep pushing it back.
So stay tuned to know Windhoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stay tuned for Windhoff.
All right. Really quickly, I want to talk about the launch cadence of SpaceX in 2021 so far. Last October or so, Elon Musk had said that it was a tweet that was in response to a series of launch scrubs, and he said he was coming to the Cape to meet with the team and overcome some of these issues because SpaceX has a goal in 2021 this year to double the number of launches that they pulled off last year. And that was his way of breaking that news that they had this goal, hadn't been publicly announced before. So let's see how we're doing so far. We've had two SpaceX launches so far, and we're 3 weeks into the year. Mm-hmm. So, and there's going to be another one tomorrow and another one next week, it looks like. So we've had TurfSat 5A. Which I think actually got pushed, back from last year, but it made it this year. So, it counts as a launch this year.
Yeah.
Yesterday's Starlink launch, tomorrow's Transporter 1 launch, which is a ride sharing satellite launch with a cool, launch path. And then next week, I believe there's going to be another Starlink launch that was a week from the previous one. So that's, SpaceX sending their internet satellites into orbit to expand their Starlink internet service around the world.
We have a Delta this year also?
Delta Heavy? I believe the Delta Heavy for this year is in Vandenberg.
But doesn't SpaceX have
currently three Falcon Heavies that are possibly scheduled to launch this year, which is three more than 2020.
I can't wait for that.
I would put money on maybe one launching this year. That's my prediction. Hopefully two. The third one. So that'll probably push back to 20.
It's a good theme. So Astrid, you were at Starlink launch. You went to a very cool location at a very early hour.
Yes.
Where'd you go? How early was it? How was the launch?
Well, I got there at 5:45 and the gates were already open. Yeah. Usually Playa Linda opens at 6. Gates opened at 5:30 yesterday.
So it's a beach in like Titusville area?
Yeah, it's a beach. Yeah, in Titusville. Mm-hmm. It was already packed when I got there at 5:45. And
you didn't leave your house at like 5?
I left my house at 5. Yeah. 5 a.m. I live in Orlando. So that was great. I mean, the vibe from everyone was just amazing. And then just the launch, it was beautiful. It was great. The rumble, it was so loud yesterday from Playa Linda. It was clear skies. It was beautiful.
And that launch, that yesterday's launch was from on the Kennedy Space Center side, launch
39A.
Complex 39A, mm-hmm. Exactly, which is really close to Playa Linda when you go all the way down, right?
Yeah, so I was in lot 2, and I believe, and I know I could be wrong, I think
that's 3.5 miles. To the end. I think it's like a mile and a half from lot 1, which is the furthest south that you can get, and it's a couple miles, yeah.
Yeah, and it's right there. I was going to walk down all the way to the end, but they only let like halfway point.
Yeah. They've been closing it off. Back in the Apollo and shuttle era, they would let that open up solely. But ever since they've had some failed launches, I think they've decided they should probably close that off.
I haven't yet been to Playa Linda except for viewing a
true one static fire,
yeah, which is like 20 seconds long.
Let's go.
Not even 20 seconds. It was a half a second long. It was a half a second long.
Yeah,
it was
half a second long.
I was so excited for this, and all of a sudden, it just was like nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I need to go out there, but you were out there with Anne, right?
I was there with Anne. Uh-huh. I was there with Anne and Derek Newsom, which is a
cool
Delta Heavy on Twitter.
Nice.
Yeah, he's great.
Nice.
I was there with quite a few people, and I love the fact that we always get to meet people, family, always asking questions. So yeah, Playa Linda is a great spot from 39A and even Pat, even 40.
Really? So tomorrow is 40.
Tomorrow's 40, but it's polar.
So because it's polar. You want to be down by the port tomorrow.
Yeah.
So because it's going to be wild going, seeing that above us.
Yeah. I might be bringing my parents up tomorrow for it. So
I'll use the 360 camera.
The what?
The Insta360 video camera.
Okay.
I want to get in that 3D audio, bro. For the 3D video.
Yeah. Sweet. 360 at least, not 3D.
No. Yeah. Sorry. 360, not 3D.
You have to use a. I'm learning that I'm old and that there are things enjoy that people didn't experience as news, like the Amazon Fire Phone. You could record in 3D with that, I believe. The whole gimmick was it was 3D.
Yeah, I didn't have a Nintendo 3DS, but I had friends with Nintendo 3DS that you could record in 3D, and it was so weird.
Yeah, that's it. Now you're old. So Transporter 1 tomorrow, and then we'll have Jared lock out there at the press site. So we'll get a lot of perspectives tomorrow. I was really happy with the pictures that we got from the team yesterday. And I was out at the port on a state highway, and it was 14 miles away. And I shot with telephoto lens and a telephoto converter. Mm-hmm. And, that was fun getting to use my camera in that setting. What was really cool was I mounted my iPhone 12 Pro Max and did video, and that had the perspective of like you got nature sounds, you got the water right there, you got birds chirping in the shot, you had like leaves and everything, and in the distance there's a rocket launch happening,
beauty,
14 miles away.
So it's really still beautiful from 14 miles away. I like everyone's perspective. Like yesterday, we all got different.
I love that we could be around the space coast. And
I love
get
it.
All different
that's
shots.
That's the beauty about it.
Yeah. What I can say about 14 miles away, we're used to 3, 6. It's that.
Well, yeah.
Is it the sound? It's like, wait, is there going to be sound?
Falcon 9s are
eventually.
Eventually, on not windy days, Falcon 9s are not very loud. Falcon Heavy. I've seen all three Falcon Heavies, but the last two I actually got to see at the Cape, and that was on the state road that you were on.
Yeah,
those are very loud. Those are still relatively loud from that far away.
Yeah, what it was, that I'm so used to the distance being much closer, and for every mile you're away, it's so many seconds that the sound has to reach you, and from that distance, it's like, it's got some pretty good height on it. Oh, is it going to make us? Oh, there's the sound. It was like several seconds later.
I got it almost immediately.
I bet you did.
And it was just so mm-hmm. beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was just an awesome feeling.
So I think it's going to be a good year. I think it might hit that, something close to the goal.
Yeah, we're definitely on track for a really busy year from SpaceX for launches.
Yeah. It's a good year to live in Orlando if you want to go see all the launches. So I'm glad I moved here.
I can't not take this opportunity. There's another company that has very good opportunities for multiple launches this year.
That's right.
Yeah. So Blue Origin is looking, they just launched NS-14 and a few weeks back.
New Shepard suborbital rocket.
Yep. Their suborbital New Shepard rocket. And they're going to be, according to some people who know the kind of the procedures and some of the understanding the workings of Blue Origin, CNBC reported this, that they're looking at launching every 6 weeks this year, which compared to their 9-month hiatus last year.
Last year they launched every 12 months.
Yeah. And so this is a very big step for them. And we were looking at some FCC filings, and they have licenses for use of the needed frequencies for these launches. Whenever there's a launch, you have to file to use these frequencies, and at least for a temporary use, like they're doing. And they have them all. They have these are kind of like hard to follow because you can like file for these for like 6 months at a time, pretty much. Right. So you're kinda like, you have no idea. They're kind of like doing for like 2-3 months at a time, and so they have they're looking at launching their NS15 by end of February, I believe, is what their speculations are.
That'll be awesome.
Hopefully, which will be a pretty much a whole dress rehearsal for crewed launch. They're actually going to put crew into the vehicle and then take them out and then launch it, and then.
Which is important. I mean,
which is very important. Yeah, this is because they've
It was epic to see that when with the demo too with Doug and Bob, you know, Doug Hurley and Bob.
So the one in late February is crew or not crew?
It's an uncrewed flight, but they're doing a crew
rehearsal and then get off and launch.
Yeah, so like for normal rehearsals, they would do is that they wouldn't launch it; they'll do everything but a launch. They're doing everything plus a launch, but they're taking the crew out for it. So it was similar. I guess you had the in-flight abort. They did this, actually. SpaceX in-flight abort. They actually took the crew out to the pad. I don't think they went up the elevator, but then they came back down.
Okay. Make sure the elevator worked.
Yeah, and the bathroom there and the phone and all that stuff. Very important things. So they're looking at trying to do that for NS15, end of February. And then NS16, around in April time, is they're going to be their according to speculations and the people who know what they're talking about, will be their first crewed launch, which is very exciting. I'm expecting it to probably be like an astronaut trainer, or the similar to what Virgin Galactic did. Their first, not including their pilots, their first like passenger was their trainer for their. For the future astronauts. So this is probably will be similar. It would be either trainer, maybe Jeff Bezos will fly onto it. I don't know.
You know, if Bill Shepard has any
family, would do that right away.
Any grandchildren?
Huh?
You know, if Bill Shepard has any like grandchildren?
I have no idea. I don't know, man. I didn't follow him that much.
You're not that old.
Well, yeah, I could dive in the Wikipedia. I'm sure.
You know what they call the bathroom at 39A.
They call.
You know what they call it?
No.
The last bathroom on Earth.
Yes. Oh, I like that.
Because then you go to space.
Yeah.
You
know? I want to go there.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
I want to use that. Fun fact, they bring a toilet with them on the crawler as well.
Really? Oh, because it's so slow.
The bathroom on there, yeah.
That makes sense.
Nice. Well, go Blue Origin.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for them to launch their first crew because we've all been saying this is their 14th flight, and like they've had almost—I don't think they've had a single failure of a launch. I think they had a failure of a parachute. I think I would have to look back see if they had any issues, but like they've been flawless for years. And like, just, why? Like, just why are you so slow? Like, come on! And now they're finally, hopefully, they're gonna really get into it this year and launch every 6 weeks.
Yep. So this will be the year that people pay a lot of attention to Blue Origin because their new Shepard rocket. And then maybe also the new Glenn rocket, which is a gigantic one.
God, I can't wait for that.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll see something pop up and just appear because that's usually how that happens out there. Appear out there at the pad. So.
Yeah. All right. That is this week's episode of the Space of Sport podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, everywhere else. We're on YouTube. I think we're going to start doing Thursdays instead of Fridays.
We're going to do it once a week.
We're going to do it once a week.
Yeah. It might be Thursdays. It might be noon. It might be 12:30. Who knows?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Asher has every Thursday off.
Yes, I do.
So makes it easy for her to be.
I would love to join every Thursday.
Yep.
Thank you guys.
So that helps out. So we're going to shoot Thursdays. Like noon 30 on those days. We're live on youtube.com/spaceexplored. And check out all the things that we discuss, articles, photos, videos at spaceexplored.com. And with that, we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.